Blog Talk Radio.
Tractor.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens and National Spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds Program. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Thursday, February 7th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to follow and visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Yeah, go join us on Facebook. We have a lot of fun over there. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply, the stuff you need out there. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is a rainy day in Georgia. Yes, finally getting a little bit of rain here. We knew it was headed this way. That's why we were very lucky and scheduled 2 days of taping with Tractor Supply yesterday and the day before. And sure enough, this morning, probably around 6 o'clock, the bottom opened up, and we just off and on all day have had heavy rain to light rain to just kind of regular showers, and I'm really glad. I thought about it. I knew I wouldn't, but I thought about it. We went to visit some neighbors last night and hung out with them a little bit with Caleb, had a great time. And on the way back, I was like, I think the rain's supposed to come and move in the morning, Jen. I might just get my flashlight and go out and put some of these plants in the ground. Some of these onion sets and seed taters that we've got. But I looked at the weather, and it said that it was going to be a nice, well, overcast, but no rain tomorrow, and then pretty nice with sunshine on Saturday and Sunday. So I figured I'd wait until the weekend to actually get out there and do some serious planning for our early spring garden. So which, as you know, if you listen to the show, will probably be the onions and the potatoes. And maybe in a couple of weeks, maybe when we get back from the seed, the Power to the Poultry tour, we'll put in some broccoli and cauliflower. So a little bit smaller. We'll be on the road traveling, a lot of things going on here. Won't have time to tend a huge garden, but those things should be just fine for us. But yeah, getting lots of rain today. Thank goodness, we definitely need it. But I was really tempted to try to get those things in yesterday. Couldn't really. All day yesterday, all day the day before, we were making videos for Tractor Supply. We got all the taping we could do down here. And now comes editing and other things like that. If you follow us on Facebook, you know that we've reached out to our fans for some photographs that we may use in the Tractor Supply videos. So it's so funny, people's different kind of mentality on things. And you know, y'all pretty much know how laid back I am. So I was like, hey, you know what? I could reach out to my fans, ask for some pictures from them. I'm sure they'd be more than happy to give some pictures or to send some pictures in my email box of their hard work and their pride and joy and some of their chickens or their runs. And by doing that, they can show others the thousands of people that are going to see these videos on the Tractor Supply website, and you know, and help educate them on what, you know, maybe an ideal coop would be in the shade, or some ideal runs with some netting or some poultry fencing and things like that. And I thought, you know, this would be a good idea. Folks, you know, to pretty much get an idea of how I am, and of course there's always one. But I'll read you the post. I just read it, and I was like, and because of this, I'm going to have to probably put some type of disclaimer on my Facebook page that says something about, you know, using them in a video and all of that kind of stuff. Let me see what I've got. It was kind of entertaining, but I'm going to read it to you. You know, I was like, you know, if I wanted to... if I wanted to, I would just, you know, hire or go find a professional photographer and do all that kind of stuff, or, you know, get this big company to, or go to photo stock and things like that. But someone put, are you being paid for these videos? If so, do we have to give up the rights on any photos that we send you? I use a lot of my chicken photos on the web, so I need to make sure that I do in fact retain the copyright to them. Are the photos being attributed in the contributor if they are posted anywhere online? Sorry, but I want to make sure that I just send that I before I send the photos over. So I didn't know any photographs that I took out in my backyard were copyrighted. I mean, isn't there a process for that? It's kind of like people putting, saying they're trademarked or, you know, putting, it's just, you know, no, you're not. Have you gone through trademark? You're just putting that there to look cool, or you're just putting that there to act big or something. You know, it was a process, and it cost, in a lot of cases, hundreds of dollars, if not over $1,000, to truly get trademarked based on the different types of trademarks you want to be able to use, to get you know, trademark, and then there's the TM sign and the C with the circle around, you know, and then the copyright, you know. So if I go outside and take a picture of my Rhode Island Red, and I want to share it with you, you gonna give me $10? Do I have to put that little C with a circle on? Is that copyrighted because I took it with my little $50 digital camera that I bought at Walmart? So anyway, there's always one. So kind of interesting. Oh my goodness! And my understanding is more than just, oh, I'll just put this little C in a circle there, and oh, all of a sudden it's officially copyrighted, and nobody can use it ever again. It's got to be more involved than just that. So that's kind of funny. So there's always somebody. So I will, if we use any, don't want her to spoil on everybody's parade. I think most people get it. Most people understand that, you know, kind of as I put on there, I said, how I'd love to reach out to my fans and have y'all, you know, help out with this. And then here's a picture of my coop in my backyard. You know, I'm not a professional photographer. I don't need to get $900 for a picture I just snapped with my $50 camera in my backyard that you might use in a video. So anyway, that's just my take, not to offend anybody, but... again, that's just me. Anybody want any pictures of my backyard, my chickens or my coops or my tractor, or you want a picture of me, maybe I'll send it over to you, you know, hey. By the way, it'll cost you $50, and I need to retain the copyright to it. my Rhode Island Red is famous. She's appeared on Fox Business as a Fox News exclusive, so maybe I could copyright a photo of her and charge $15 a piece for it that I took from my $50 digital camera I got at Walmart. Oh my goodness. So pretty amazing. So anyway, just wanted to share that with you, because when I saw that post, I just kind of rolled my eyes and I was like, you're kidding, right? Anywho, let's see what else we got here going on. Great show today. I think this may be the first show back this year, 2013, with poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD. And so we're very excited to have her back on today. And we've got an interesting show today. She's going to be talking – well, I'm not really sure what she's going to be talking about. She told me, and we talked about it a little bit, but that was it. Oh, let me tell you the cool stuff, though. Still very, very, very preliminary. Very preliminary. I mean, I've talked to – when I called Dr. McRae yesterday to confirm she would be on today, because when I called her a couple of days ago, she sounded horrible with a head cold or a flu or something, you know, sinuses. She said she got some antibiotics, and she sounded – I called her, and she picked up the phone. And I was like, oh, my gosh, you sound like a totally different person than you did 2 days ago. I'm glad you're feeling better. At least you sound better. But we were talking, and I was telling her about – you know, I wanted to, here at the Old Homestead, and I've always wanted to do this. I've shared with you on the show before, not just to back up or any of my personal beliefs or anything like that about organic, non-organic, things like that, but it's always something I've talked about on the radio show, and she yesterday, when I mentioned it again, she kind of jumped on the bandwagon and said, hey, you know, if you would like, I can help you write this. We can get a grant for this study and do it the right way. You know, it'd be great. You know, since you're not a scientist, you know, some, you know, if you have me on board, we could try to get a grant to do this study to pay for some of the supplies or the feed or this, that, or the other. And then one of the stipulations is once you have the results that you have to get them out there and share them. And obviously that's a given with the radio show and the, you know, Facebook and Twitter and the tour and all that kind of stuff. But the study I've always wanted to do, and Dr. McRae even said, hey, I'm going to be in Jacksonville on this weekend. Maybe I can drive over. We can look and kind of plan it and set it up. And then I can go back and write about this study, and maybe we'll apply for some grant money to do this official study. And everything has to be, oh, my gosh, documented. And it seems to be a lot of work to do an official study, not just, hey, guys, I did this in my backyard. This is what I found out, you know, to go down the official path. Maybe I can get that copyrighted too and charge for it. But anywho, what I want to do is and this is what I told her, and then she was saying, no, we can only do one thing at a time. You can't kind of combine studies and try to find out two things at once for some reason. But initially I was saying, look, I would love to, you know, I've got two identical coops out back, two identical runs, same size, same everything. I mean, I'm really kind of set up to do it to a good study. But what I want to do is I want to purchase same hatchery. I want to purchase 20. Actually, I want to purchase 40 layers, 40 pullets, and 20 of them will be in one pen and coop, and 20 will be in the other pen and coop. Okay, one set of 20 in that mirrored setting, same coop, same run, same feed. I mean, location, shavings, everything. Everything will be the same. 20 of the layers will be vaccinated and receive standard commercial feed right out of the feed and seed store. Okay, the other 20 layers slash pullets in that environment will not be vaccinated and will only get organic feed. Okay, and we'll do this up until, of course, they start laying. And then once they start laying, then we will have the eggs tested, because I want to see, and I've gotten some organic feed before, but I don't routinely feed it. A lot of people do. I do eat organic feed. I try to buy organic food for me and my family as much as I can down here in South Georgia. It's kind of difficult. Grow most of my own. No pesticides, chemicals. But so then I can see, you can see, everybody in the country, everybody in the world can see the whole study, 20 pullets purchased, 20 pullets purchased, vaccinated, non-vaccinated, organic feed, regular, you know, store-bought feed, non-organic, raised all the same, same water, same waterer, same feeders, everything the same. And then test those eggs and see if there's a hill of bean difference. Why? Well, I'd love for you to know if you're spending $40 a bag on organic feed, if it's doing a daggum thing. Okay. Now, you don't have to send me emails about GMO and Monsanto. If you've listened to the show a long time, you know my views on all of that and eating organic and all that kind of stuff. However, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, and I would love to just see, I would consider it, you know, kind of like doing a service for all the folks out there that you know, they'll claim or they'll say, oh yeah, I give organic feed and I don't get them vaccinated and ooh, my eggs are so awesome. And then we do a test and maybe they are. Maybe they're so much better, higher in all this great stuff, lower in all this other bad stuff. Maybe there's the things that you might find in the egg that are contained in the feed, pesticides. I don't know. Okay, I'm not a scientist, but I would love to do that study just so these folks that are so focused. And I've gotten plenty of birds non-vaccinated. I've fed organic feed, but the ones that are adamant about it and claim, oh yeah, my eggs are so much better. To see if there's a difference. Okay, what's the difference? Are you really getting your money's worth when you're paying $30 or $40 a bag for organic feed? Okay, so anyway, so we talked a little bit about that, and really looking forward to maybe getting that up and going here, maybe this year, maybe next year, as we try to get that study written and try to apply for some grants to do that study. So that's kind of neat. Looking forward to that. I've been talking about doing some. I was like, I wish somebody would do a study. So now I'm kind of like, well, maybe that somebody is me and Dr. McCray, and we'll get this done. You know, she's the scientist. Walk me through it. Let me know what to do, what not to do, how to write it. Get the grant done, and so we'll have some type of official. And then at the end of it, actually write the report and say, got news for you folks. All you folks using, you know, paying $40 a bag for organic feed. Guess what? No difference. So anywho. We'll see. Maybe there is a difference. Maybe I'll say, all of you guys using organic feed, keep doing it. Here's a difference. So who knows? But we'll see how that pans out. So anyway, thanks for joining us today. Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Great show today with poultry scientist and professor, Dr. McCray. And we're really glad to have her here. She, of course, now is in the chicken chat room, so which is a little slow to fill up today. So let me go ahead and send my regular old and wonderful shout out. Hey, want to send a shout out to all the over-the-road truck drivers we hear from that listen to the archive of the show. Thank you very much for doing so. Keep the rubber on the road and drive safe out there. Hey, all the homeschoolers, we thank you very much for listening to the show and incorporating the show into your daily curriculum. So thank you very much, homeschoolers. We support you 100%. All the folks, of course, in the chat room and who are listening live that can't get in the chat room because maybe it's just not opening. Blog Talk Radio is not being friendly to you today, or maybe your work blocks the chat room and they're not allowing you to get in there. Sorry to hear that. And of course, all the feed and seed stores across the country that stream this radio show live for their listeners. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you very much. All right, let me get over here to the phone lines, the queue, the caller queue. By the way, we've got 50 phone lines, so when we do contests and things. Oh, did you get the early bird secret password? Were you a good student today? Were you a good listener? Were you on time when the radio started? If you were here on time, then you heard the early bird secret password. The early bird secret password. And so maybe later in the show, we might have Dr. McCray read us a question out of the Avian Bowl manual, and we'll have we don't need Dr. McCray to do that because there's the password. So we'll have Dr. McCray pick the winning caller. How about that? And then and then if you're the right caller, if you know the early bird secret password today, if you were a good student, you were on time before the bell rang, then you got that early bird secret password. So keep that written down because you'll have a chance to win a prize or two a little later in the show for being on time and a good poultry student. I wonder if Dr. McCray is one of those professors where, we never had bells in college, but it would ring. That's high school. But, looking at her watch standing by the door, all of a sudden, 10 a.m., class starts, boom, closes the door, locks it. No, you're not allowed entry. Or if she's just kind of laid back, leaves the door open, kind of gets started, maybe some people trickle in, they sit down, they start popping their sodas in class and, open up the bag of chips. I wonder, maybe we'll have to ask her, see what kind of classroom rule she has. But we can't implement those unless they're cool classroom rules here on the radio show. Oh my goodness. Hey, let's go over to the phone lines. We'll bring on our good friend Dr. McCray. Let's give her a big round of applause and welcome out there in the chicken chat room.
Hey there, Andy.
Hey, thanks for joining us today. So glad to have you.
Well, my classroom, whether the door locks or not, is not my decision. It's whatever room I end up being assigned during the fall or the spring, whenever I teach. Some of the doors lock all the time, and you have to swipe yourself to get in and then just keep the door propped open. So if somebody – sorry, I still have a cough from my round with the flu. But if somebody bumps the door and it shuts, it locks automatically. I have to go over and prop it open and – do all sorts of silly things. Other classrooms, not a big deal. So it depends on what room I'm assigned.
I asked you one time, are you a stickler when it comes to chewing gum or sodas or eating?
Class is at 3:00 in the afternoon, and it's usually after 3 or 4 other classes have been in there, so there's no oxygen left in the room. So I don't care what the students do to keep themselves awake as long as they're not asleep in my class.
There you go. So no sleeping.
No sleeping. If somebody falls asleep in my class, I ask the fellow students to wake them up or ask them if they would rather, take the hour and go rest and maybe get their notes from a friend rather than being passed out in the front row.
Do you have a preference of how they wake their fellow classmate up, like a nice slap across the back of the head?
I tell them wake them up, and I don't care how. I had a teacher one time in junior college in chemistry. He had about a half-inch metal rod.
Oh, my.
That was about 3 feet long. And if somebody was falling asleep, he would take it out from underneath the teaching island in the front of the room and just slap it as hard as he could against the top of the table, which scared the bejesus out of you if you were asleep or if you had your head down and were writing notes and didn't see him pull it out. You were like, what the heck? It just happened. Another teacher would just throw chalk at you.
Throw chalk at you?
Yep.
Wake up.
Yep. With laser-like accuracy.
I love the most famous comment, I think, of all I guess it was Fast Times at Ridgemont High with Scapoli, and the teacher was like, something about, you're wasting my time. And he says, well, if you're here and I'm here, doesn't that make it our time?
Yeah, was that Sean Penn?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, that was classic. Right, it is our time, so everybody can have a slice of pizza. That's a good comment.
You're kind of coming in and out. Is anybody else having a hard time hearing Andy?
Well, I can fix that problem here in about 15 seconds. I'll let you go ahead and get started with today's topics, and I'll be gone for about 10 seconds while I'll try to find another line to come in on.
Oh, okay. Well, everybody, one of the things that Andy and I discussed when we were talking about the list of topics to cover this year was some of the new, latest and greatest information out there that comes out in research journals that doesn't always get very quickly translated down to something that you listeners can interpret. And I know not everybody wants to spend the money or the time reading research journals. So one of the things that we're going to do is talk about, I think I've got two and a half articles here that we might get through today.
Okay.
The first one is a comparative examination of rearing parameters and laying production performance for brown egg type pullets grown either free range or in cages. And this is a fun study, at least I say fun study, done because there's a lot of questions out there and a lot of comments saying, oh, free-range eggs are better.
Mm-hmm.
So what does better mean to you, Andy?
I guess when I hear folks say, oh, my eggs are better, we talked about that a few minutes ago, maybe they taste better. Maybe they're higher in good things like omega-3s and vitamin D and then lower in bad things like cholesterol and saturated fat. Maybe they're organic. Maybe they're not.
So in order and to kind of answer the question that you were mentioning when I came in, the reason why we measure one thing at a time is that so you don't confound your results by looking at too many parameters and then not be able to say, well, was it because of this?
Mm.
Or was it because of this? Or did they interact? Well, how do you distinguish the answers? Did you accurately find a way to measure and answer your question in a statistically sound manner so that your results weren't due to chance? It was due to your principle that you were testing. And it is with that amount of certainty that we can say this had an effect, but this did not, because we put the results up against, you know, statistical soundness. Like putting your feet to the fire, honestly. Did it work? Did it not work? And if you can't pass this test, we know it didn't work. So this study took a look at only brown-shelled egg layers. They were highline brown layers, and this research was done in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
What they did is they received eggs from highline, and they hatched them all at the facility in North Carolina. So they were all in the same incubator. They were all in the same hatcher conditions, no differences. So you remove that variable right there.
Okay.
There was no difference in the incubator. You know, it was all from the same source. Then they sexed the chicks, because with highline browns, you can tell which ones are males and which ones are females,
mm-hmm,
by color sexing.
Mm-hmm.
And they only want to look at the egg layer. So they sexed the chicks and kept the females. They vaccinated for Merrick's disease. And the chickens that they were going to put into the range portion of the study were pinioned. Do you know what that means, Andy?
I do not.
Okay. So pinioning, sorry, pinioning is typically something done with ducks, but you can also do it with all birds. Basically, you remove the tip of one wing. So rather than catching the adult birds and putting them through the stress of trimming the primaries and secondaries on one,
mm-hmm,
wing,
mm-hmm,
you just pinion them so that they don't ever get those primary feathers to grow, and so they'll be unbalanced and they won't be able to fly off.
That's a permanent process when they,
mm-hmm,
do it? Okay.
So you just, basically, you just like you do for beak trimming, you take that hot blade that cuts and cauterizes at the same time, and you do that just to the tip of the wing. So that's pinioning.
And at what age?
They did this at hatch, so day one.
Okay.
Now, one of the other things they did was they beaked trimmed these birds.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the birds were going to go outside and some of the birds were going to go in cages. So they just beak trimmed them all so that they couldn't say that beak trimming made a difference. Okay?
Gotcha.
Next, they equally divided the chicks between two pullet raising facilities. So they brooded the cage birds in a cage system, and they brooded the free range birds on the floor. So from the start, they were raised like you would in those two separate systems.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
Sorry, I've got to stop
nope,
here
no.
if I have to take a break.
No worries, please let us know.
So what they did, if the chicks went into the cage brooding system, they had six replications. Let me explain replications. Anything can happen once, right? But if it happens multiple times, you know something's up. So rather than doing this study over and over and over again over the course of several years, they do replication. So they put, how many birds? They filled cages with 13 birds, four cages filled with 13 birds each, and they did that six times. So a total of 24 cages. So rather than doing four cages filled with 13 birds this year, and then again next year, and then again next year, and then, you know, several years, they just do it all at once if they have the space. That's called replication. So if I were raising, as an example, if I were raising cows,
mm-hmm,
and I wanted to see how this feed, you maybe have two types of feed, their normal feed and a new feed. Well, I'll do three pens of cows in their normal feed and three pens of cows in the new feed. And then you're basically going to, like, say, take an average of each pen. But you did it three times, and if they all do it, or they all do it within a reasonable, you know, maybe they all gain weight within a reasonable amount of pounds of one another, that's the value of a replication. Or it could be that one pen, they all died. Okay, what does that mean? Well, if you were only doing two pens to compare, then what the heck happened? Why,
mm-hmm,
did that one pen die. Well, thank goodness he had two other pens just like it, and you can average those two pens.
Was that would that make the study and maybe more accurate too, or would it?
It improves accuracy, yes, and it also improves.
Eliminate some of the naysayers.
it improves your accuracy, and it improves your statistical soundness.
Okay.
Because if you know, numbers don't lie, and so
now
you
got me. You've got me worried now with what kind of what we talked about.
Yeah,
we
need to talk
our,
about that in more detail to make sure
you
can do what you want to do.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to have it.
I will help you
four,
through that.
Five
as I do with my students. So like my student Ashley's learning, you know, she takes classes on statistical and analysis and experimental design. And so, mm-hmm. you know, students that work on their master's of science degree often have to be sound in their statistical analysis. But that's just, you know, a couple of examples. But in this study, they had replications, so that improves the statistical certainty of what actually occurred and what they were measuring. The chicks that were brooded together, they were always kept together. So the chicks that were all in the same cage, they all stayed in the same cage. Chicks that were all in the same floor space, they were all in the same floor space. So the chicks that were in the cage, they had 48 square inches per bird. So they had plenty of space. Paper was also placed on the bottom of the cage floor for the first 7 days so that they wouldn't fall through the bottom.
Okay.
That makes sense. And yeah. they took that paper out when they were old enough, which was about the time that they did the beak trimming. They did beak trimming at 6 to 10 days. In the free-range group, they were brooded on the floor in an environmentally controlled house. Every group was kept at the same temperature. They had plenty of feeder space, drinker space. 17 pens were filled with 15 brown egg layers each. So there was lots of replication. Next, the pullets that were supposed to go outside were moved to the range house and the paddocks that went with the range house so they could go out in free range when they were 12 weeks old. So the pullets always had access to food and water. They all had their regular shots, just like their cage-reared buddies. And what kind of grass was out there? They had a kind of a Bermuda grass, fescue grass, and clover mix, something that was normal for the North Carolina region. They also did soil analysis, but I'm not going to go through that detail. The range hut was naturally lit during the daylight hours, but they also provided supplemental light so that the birds that were on the free-range system had the same number of daylight hours as the birds that were kept in cages.
Okay.
So the lighting was the same.
Well, I can hear a naysayer now. Well, they had true sunlight where they had artificial light, so the study's all just gone to heck.
Someone could say that, yes.
You get people like that, yeah. So, I mean,
and they also gave them extra heat. In case, you know, because I think the study kind of went into the fall, winter. So they always kept the interior temperature above 45 degrees, which is, you know, the lower end of the thermal neutral zone for birds. So, yes, these birds had access, the free-range birds had access to the outdoors. They were placed at a density of 500 hens per acre. So that was their density in each pen. The range pens were 70 foot by 70 foot, and they had a 6 foot tall fence. The pullets were, I'm going to read this wrong if I'm not careful. So the feed, we're going to talk about the feed here. All the birds were fed a starter diet that contained a coccidia stat. So that meant the birds inside and the birds outside. Then they were given a grower diet. Then they were given a developer diet. So they received their starter diet from day zero, or the day they were placed, until they were 6 weeks old. Then they were given a grower until they were 12 weeks old, then a developer until they were 15 weeks old, and then a prelay diet until they were 16 weeks old, and then their layer diet from there on out.
Okay.
They monitored feed consumption. They monitored body weight. They did that every other week, starting at 2 weeks old. They looked at, they recorded mortality. They recorded environmental conditions. And let's start talking about some of the results.
Okay.
Because they looked at the eggs, they looked at body weight. So let's start talking about what effect did this have? Did this, these two different conditions, even though everything else was the same, two different living conditions have. There were significant differences as they grew in body weight, body gain, feed conversion, and daily feed consumption.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that every other week they were weighing the birds. Every other week they were determining how much feed was consumed, how much they converted, you know, all that good information. And they found that there were normal growth curves. That's basically what that sentence means. There were normal growth curves. The rate of body weight gain plateaued at about 8 weeks and then declined a little bit through week 16. Feed efficiency was greatest at a month old to about month and a half old. And that's consistent across all the birds. It didn't matter if they were inside or outside. So when the housing condition doesn't have an effect, then you just look at them as pullets, okay, as chickens in general. It doesn't matter where they live. Since housing condition didn't have any effect, they were just looking at time's effect as they were growing up. Now let's look at in the environment. Those chickens that were raised in cages were significantly heavier than the ones outside. And they indicated that by lower body weight gain until they were about 12 weeks old. So, interestingly, the indoor chickens were bigger. The outdoor chickens were lighter. And they looked at total feed consumption. The chickens outside, in the free range conditions, they ate about 13.3% less feed. Well, they were lighter.
Right.
That makes sense,
but,
right? They ate less feed, and so their body weights were lower. And since we don't have a way to accurately measure forage consumption, it's kind of assumed that the difference there is because they were moving around eating feed, and instead of focusing them on body weight gain, they were expending energy on moving around. So their overall body weight was lower.
I wonder if, and I guess you couldn't really study the psychological aspects, but, you know, if you put me in the kitchen with a chair, if you pull me up to a buffet with a chair, you know, I'm there, I'm at the buffet, I can't go over there, I can't go over here, I'm in this cage, and if you pull me up to a chair, I'm going to eat, versus maybe I'm outside, I'm not right in front of my food. I don't have food right there in front of me all day. I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm walking around. I guess you could justify that, just human nature.
And that's exactly what they said, too. They said basically, with increased foraging, the use of feed for activity rather than growth would explain the reduction in body weight.
Okay.
So how they use their energy and how that translates. Okay, they looked at livability and mortality, and there was no significant difference between the mortality of the chickens inside versus outside. Although they did come across a couple of times where there appeared to be predator issues, they also could not tell. Sometimes they came out and just saw a bird that looked like it had been cannibalized, but they didn't know if that was after a predation incident. So they couldn't really separate the two. They didn't know if maybe a bird, like maybe a hawk came down and you know, killed a bird, but then the other chickens came over and cannibalized it. You know, you can't really tell in a situation like that what happened first. Was the bird just cannibalized, or was there a predator that came in first?
Can I stop you right? Totally. You're talking about that, I guess. I don't guess you gave, or maybe you did, and I missed it. Talking about, like you're saying, you didn't know outside if it was a predator or cannibalism versus the cage. Is there any information there to say they lost more birds, pasture raised or free range versus the cage? Did you mention a number there?
They were identical.
So no difference there. And the reason why I'm asked is because we've had professional commercial farmers on that raise chickens with literally millions of chickens, and they'll have both just for to appease their customers. They will have what they call free range in the houses with access to outside, or cage free, I guess, and then cages. And they've claimed that they lose more chickens when they're all free to do whatever they want to in an open house versus in the cages, because they have the instinct of fight, even though they're beak trimmed. Because they fight or cannibalistic, or they claim, again, maybe just to appease us when we're on the show, but that they lose more chickens in that open house all running around than their cages.
I'm getting ahead of myself here. When I was talking about livability, I got ahead of myself and started to confuse that with mortality. Their mortality was higher outside. Their livability was the same. And when you start to look at the livability of the birds inside and outside, that has something to do with uniformity. So how many of the birds are reaching the same body weight at the same time?
Uh-huh.
So that they start laying at approximately the same week. And so their livability was about the same. Their mortality, straight out of the book, additionally, total mortality was significantly higher in free-range hens, primarily because of predation. In addition to predation, cannibalism continued to increase mortality on the range. However, it was difficult to differentiate between incidences of predation and cannibalism. So I started that section wrong. I'm correcting myself. I apologize for that.
No problem.
But when it comes to livability and uniformity, you want your birds to start laying at about the same time.
Okay.
So that you switch, you know, when they reach the same body weight about the same time, so you switch feeds and don't leave somebody behind. You switch lighting systems and you don't mess anybody else up.
Mm-hmm.
You want them to be pretty uniform. And that way you can make changes that, slow, gradual changes that affect them all at the same time. But they had problems, and I do remember this researcher coming to a poultry science annual conference, and they were talking about how they thought it was owls doing the damage at night. I think it was owls or some bird of prey that was doing the damage to their flock. And they weren't very happy about it because they just, you know, they don't want to see that happen to their flock. Nobody wants to see that happen to their flock. The rearing environment had an impact on the overall 16-week body weight. The free-range pullets were lighter. Egg production, that's what we're going to go into next, because they did take a look at the eggs. The cage birds had significantly higher feed conversions and significantly higher daily egg masses. So the weight of the eggs were higher than their free-range flock mates. So when you say your eggs are better, well, if you go by size or overall weight, you're going to get larger eggs from caged hens. So when people say better, some people think because an egg is bigger, it's better.
Does that have anything to do with food, the amount of food? We talked about the amount of food. They ate a lot more. As a scientist,
No, bigger birds lay bigger eggs.
So they were bigger probably based on how much they ate. We talked about
by
that
body
earlier.
Size.
They are laying bigger eggs because they're bigger birds.
Because
they ate
their
more.
Body weight can accommodate it.
Okay, great.
So they also looked at cage hens versus free-range hens and the number of grade A eggs versus grade B eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking at the outside of the eggs. Free-range eggs had significantly greater number of grade B eggs. So lower quality eggs on a quality grading scale. And they said that was mostly due to the soiling on the shell, because when you grade eggs,
mm-hmm.
Stains and adhering foreign material all
mm-hmm.
contribute to the grading scale. So many 4-H'ers who participate in the poultry judging contest can tell you they have to judge eggs on interior quality and exterior quality. And that which lowers the grade the most lowers the overall grade. So if the exterior says B, but the interior says A, you have to sell it as a B grade egg. You have to go with the lower grade. Does that make
okay.
sense? Do I need to say it again?
No, that makes sense. But you said something that immediately made me think that about the stuff that might be on the outside of the egg. That's just right after it's laid. Could they not clean that egg and say, "Oh, it's pretty now. It's a grade A"?
I don't know how they did egg collection. It might have been once a day. It might have been twice a day.
Hmm.
But I bet you they were just looking at the overall nest run quality of the egg.
Okay.
So, you know, straight out of the nest, no cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be more like what you would see in a non-commercial system,
right.
smaller system, backyard system. And so labor then comes in after that step. The higher quality it is coming right out of the chicken, the less work you have to put into it.
Yep.
And therefore your price goes down. The more work you put into it, the more you charge for the eggs. So they also looked at the interior quality of the eggs, moving on to the next step. there was no significant differences in the distribution of egg weights or sizes between indoor and outdoor. Egg quality, cage hens had significantly greater haw unit. So the caged hens had albumin that stood up higher than the free-range hens. But the free-range hens had significantly greater shell strength than the caged hens, give and take.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you've got hens that are inside that were overall, body weight was larger, laying larger eggs. You've got overall albumin height is larger than the birds outside, but what I think probably the next step would be is why were the free-range eggs stronger in their shell strength? What were they getting from those conditions that made that difference?
Right.
And so that might be a good next step for a young researcher out there to follow up on and determine, you know, what affected that? What caused that change? How do you manipulate that? Can you manipulate that? So overall, pullet age significantly affected the body weight gain, feed efficiency, daily feed consumption, and rearing environment had no effect on that. Pullets reared in the free-range environment were significantly lighter than their caged counterparts, potentially because they are more active, because they're out there foraging. The use of feed for activity rather than growth resulted in increased foraging might explain the lower body weight. Cage hens had overall egg production and quality characteristics, had better overall egg production and quality characteristics compared with free-range hens based on feed conversion ratio, daily egg masses, production of eggs per hen housed and per hen day, and I didn't go through that, but that's every hen housed and or per every hen, every 100 hens housed. And they had, you know, several hundred birds in this study. And then there was a production of egg grade, a greater production of A-grade eggs amongst the caged hens. So, you know, more work could be done to ferret out some of these details. Pretty interesting study. I found that their comparisons of just brown egg layers was very interesting because a lot of times small flock owners have or prefer the brown egg layers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whether they start with a sex-linked brown egg layer strain or they have a heritage breed, it's usually just a preference on the part of the owner. And when we say better, what do we mean? What do you mean your eggs are better? Define that. What are you measuring?
There
what
was a question,
is your scale of measure?
There was a question in the chat room. Did the study mention anything about yolk color?
Not this one.
Okay.
My student's doing that in her study. But when you assign a student a research study, there's only so many things you can expect them to do in a reasonable amount of time.
Sure.
And so that might be something that they put out in another study if they did that. Yolk color is not necessarily something that everyone considers to be better. I've cracked open eggs that have bright orange, almost red, and
uh-huh.
people are grossed out by it. So, you know, what's wrong with that egg? It's just got more xanthophylls. So you have to consider your customer, what they're looking for. There's a lot of factors here. But when people say better, always ask them, based on what? What are you measuring?
Mm-hmm.
Better how? Why? And a lot of people can't answer that. So you have to define better. A lot of people don't like that answer. But you know, if you're going to compare apples and oranges, what are you measuring against, you know?
Yeah.
What are you going to use the measure to compare the two?
It's like a vanilla cream Twinkie prevents cancer more than a chocolate-filled Twinkie. because I eat a vanilla-filled Twinkie every day, and so far, knock on wood, have not been diagnosed with cancer. So Twinkies prevent cancer!
Yeah,
no, exactly.
There are some of those leaps in logic, and, you know, the Internet is wonderful for that sometimes.
Amen, sister. So that was awesome.
I always challenge my students whenever they, you know, come out and say, oh, I heard on the news that such and such and such, and then I make them think about, you know, based on what? Oh, I don't know. They didn't talk about it. And I said, so you're just going to take that at face value? I mean, you should question everything until you're satisfied. And teaching students to question or read critically is what we do here, what we try to do with every student. Well, do you want to take a break, or should I go into the next?
Yeah, this is perfect timing. It's about 2 minutes till one. We'll take a break. This is great.
Well,
and
good luck with your chocolate Twinkies. Oops, sorry.
Yeah, oh, no, it's probably the chocolate Twinkies. Exactly. I haven't had a Twinkie.
Good luck
in
with
a
your Twinkie comparison.
Decade.
There.
So, yeah, we'll do a study on that too and see what happens with that while we're doing the chicken study on organic feed versus non-organic feed. So, absolutely. Well, that was really amazing. I was fascinated by that. I posted in the chat room. I said, "This is pretty awesome. Is it just me or what?" Everybody, and of course, the questions are coming. We're coming in too. So it lets us show that, you know, that aren't maybe in that scientific field of all the all the things you have to think about, all the parameters, what's a good study, what's a bad study. And even here, I had challenged a couple of things about that as well. Well, that's sunlight, though, so more vitamin D, or you know, versus fake light. And you had talked about, yeah, that's a good question regarding the study. So I guess anything and everything can be questioned, but hey, a study is just that. So we're talking with poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McCrae, and she's covering some really cool studies, and which I found pretty fascinating, and let you know kind of what goes into a study. So we'll continue. She's got another one she's going to share with us when we return right after this short break from our sponsors. Stay with us, folks. We also have a prize to give away to somebody who got the early bird secret password.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website. healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, our guest today being the first Thursday. No, is this the first? Yeah, it is the first Thursday of the month. Dr. Bridget McCrae. So, and we're talking about different studies today. Welcome back.
Hello.
Alrighty. So very cool. I'm ready to dive into the next one here. This is cool.
Well, another one that I seem to always be talking about is parasites. And I know that I talked about some parasite work before, external parasite work, that involved diatomaceous earth. And I found another study that involved diatomaceous earth as well as comparing some other liquid formulations. So they're looking at the northern fowl mite, and they were looking at spraying liquid formulations of diatomaceous earth or kaolin, which is a clay, also sulfur, and azadiractin, which is the active ingredient in neem oil. And I think I've mentioned neem oil once.
You have,
twice.
Yeah.
This is the active ingredient. So didn't actually go out and squeeze a neem tree and get oil. They ferreted out the active ingredient. And then the last thing they compared was Bovaria bassiana, which is a form of fungus that affects insects. So, you know, we know that mites are a pain in the rear because they get on the birds, they bother the birds, they can get on you, and yes, they can bite you. We're not their natural host, but, you know, if you think one's crawling on you, you won't be happy until you go take a shower. So, you know, they affect the bird's egg production. They reduce egg production. They also reduce feed conversion efficiency. They'll eventually affect body weight gains and can cause the birds to pass away if they don't get any resolution to the problem. As the bird lowers its body weight and begins to feel sicker and sicker, you're going to get smaller and smaller eggs until they stop laying. And we know that the immune system stops trying to do its normal function and tries to take on the mites, and that's diverting resources away from normal body functions. So,
including laying. They might reduce that egg production.
If you got chickens for eggs and they're not happy, they're not going to lay you any eggs. They quoted another study by the same authors of this research. It says it has recently been shown that beak trimming directly causes high and damaging northern fowl mite populations through impaired grooming. So when you trim the beaks, they can't groom themselves as well, and if they start to have a mite problem, they're not going to do as well as birds that have a full beak. So that's something to consider if you have a choice of selecting beak-trimmed birds or not. And we know that all the birds in the last study were beak-trimmed, and they still had cannibalism issues outside and predation issues outside. So what they did is, how they designed their studies, they took laying hens that were 25 to 45 weeks old, and they infested them, each bird, with about 20 to 30 adult northern fowl mites. And so what they did is they wanted all these clean birds to be about the same level of infestation, and they did this about 3 to 5 weeks before they started their treatments. So all the birds were at about the same level of infestation by mites. Does that make sense?
Yep.
All right. So at first they worked with Leghorns, Highline W36s, and their first study looked at the control, which was no treatment, and the test group, which was treated with azadirachtin at about 0.6%. And what they do is they spray the birds about 8 milliliters of the solution right around the vent. And then what they do is they score the birds based upon the number of adult northern fowl mites around the vent. And they have a whole scoring system that they describe in this study, but it's based on, like, 0 was no mites, 1 was 1 to 10 mites, 2 was 11 to 50, and it goes up from there. Because we all know that sometimes there can be more than 50 mites on a bird when you look back there.
Oh, yeah.
Then they did a second experiment, and I'll go through the results of the first one when I get to the results section. So the second experiment, they used more tests. They did untreated control. They did deionized water, thinking, okay, well, you've got the group that you're not treating. Then you've got to kind of have a positive control, because the rest of your treatments, you're spraying something onto the bird. Maybe spraying itself has an effect. So why don't we take one group and just spray them with water and see if that has an effect? So the second group was just sprayed with water. And then then they had the clay group, the kaolin clay group. They had the diatomaceous earth group. They had a high sulfur level group. Concentration was about 15.6%. Then they had a low sulfur control group. And then they had the fungus group. And they spend quite a bit of time talking about how they grew the fungus, and I'm not going to bore you with that. but it seems pretty darn thorough. What they found in their results was that the sulfur was very, very effective against northern fowl mites, even at the lower concentration. And the lower concentration, from what I read, I believe was 5.3%. So sulfur does a good job. And you're probably wondering, so you want me to go out there and climb a volcano and go get sulfur? No, Dr. McCray, I'm just not going to do that. I don't blame you. So there's products out there you can buy. Or go to a sulfur spring. Well, not everybody's going to want to do that. So what they used was something called Poultry Shield. And you'll like this. They're from Valdosta.
All right.
That's down in your area, Andy.
Yes, it is.
It's called Georgia Gulf Sulfur. And so their poultry shield worked really well. So, you know, we're all used to putting a dust on our bird. Sometimes there are wettable powders, and this appeared to be one of those sulfurs that you could mix water with and then just spray it onto the bird, a wettable powder. Then they found that even the lowest concentrations of the sulfur were really effective in eliminating mites for about 4 or 5 weeks. And then they didn't get back to high populations until almost 2 months after the treatment, month and a half to 2 months after the treatment, the very first treatment. And I have to say that's good news to hear. Makes me happy to hear that, because a lot of people want their birds to go outside. If they do get exposed to mites, it usually ends up being such a struggle to get that back under control in some fashion. And winter is the worst time, because all the birds crowd together and the mites go from bird to bird to bird very easily. And so there is a solution out there. That product seemed to work very well. But when you compare that product with the others, if you go in order, sulfur was the most effective.
Okay.
Then the neem, or that azadirachtin. Mm-hmm. Then the kaolin clay. Then the diatomaceous earth. And then the fungus. So if you had a choice, all of these are liquid materials. You can, you know, if you're looking to use something less toxic, or, you know, you have a small flock and you can treat by hand, this is something that you can consider as an alternative. And that's good news for folks who are looking to perhaps not use a permethrin spray or something that they view as a chemical that they can't use in their flock, or maybe they're trying to do organic programs and they can't use certain chemicals. So there you have that study. Question. I was not watching the chat room, Andy. I'm sorry. I don't know if any questions came up at all.
No problem at all. It spins fast sometime. I'm trying to think here. Nope, it's been pretty slow. I guess they're taking notes or just in thought of trying to concentrate what you're saying. There was some chicken related questions, but not specifically related to the study itself. So there's a lot that shows us a lot that goes on with, you know, these studies, and it sounds like a lot of it is done just, well, I guess accurately, to make it as most accurate study as possible, not necessarily to eliminate a lot of the naysayers, which if you do try to make it as accurate as possible, eliminate some of the naysayers, which is very interesting. Somebody asked in the chat room, I was told that mites affect roosters more than hens. Is there any truth to that? Have you heard, Dr. McCray?
No.
Okay. Very good. And
not to my knowledge. You can test that if you want.
Hey, there you go, Brits and Grits in the chat room. She was asking that question. And where, Christmas Chick in the chat room, where can I get the sulfur product or products?
Just as a reminder, that product's name was Poultry Shield.
Okay.
And you might check with your feed store, see if that's something they can order or if they already carry it.
Okay. Perfect.
Where do these mites come from? That came from farming dew.
Uh-huh.
Mites can come from new birds that you introduce to your flock. They may have been infected. Mites tend to come from other birds. So little Tweety birds are not your friend.
Mm-hmm.
They carry both disease, and they will very quickly deliver mites to your birds. And they're coming in usually for either feed or water that you put out for your birds. And so when they take off and land on a surface, they often leave behind or knock off in the process mites that then start searching for a new host. And if your chicken's nearby, well, by golly,
there's a new host.
That's the new host.
I'm
bummer
going
for
through,
your chicken.
I'm going
bummer
through
for
a
you.
Lot of these. A lot of these pictures I had requested to fans. Hey, you know, we need a few pictures for these videos that, you know, I don't have a jillion different setups in my backyard. So, hey, if you'd like to participate and be involved in these videos, hey, send me some pictures. And I've seen at least two going through them where they had a wild bird feeder within their chicken run / coop.
Oh, my God.
Yep. And I was just like, I just kind of, I'm like, oh.
Three things come to mind. Mycoplasma. Internal parasites, external parasites, and then I don't even want to go into some of the other diseases that these little birds can carry.
Yep. So I was like, oh my goodness, they had a tree within the run, and it had a bird house, bird feeder there. In that area. So, and you know, it's like, I don't know. You and me, Peter Brown, you know, we try to share the best information we can. You're always going to have somebody, just like Peter says, you know, well, you know, you're always going to have somebody that says, well, I've done this for 30 years and never had a problem, or I've had wild bird feeders in my backyard and I've had chickens just as long and I've never lost a chicken in my life. You know, you're always going to have that, but hey, sharing the information, I guess we know to be true, and some, you know, studies and things like that, there will always be an exception to the rule. A lot of times when you listen to Peter on Monday, he'll say, as a general rule, you know, we were talking about that on off the show, because you will always get those folks that'll say, well, I've never had a problem with wild bird
feeders. No. And you have a good question in the chat room. Farming Dew asked if bats would help with the mites. Well, bats tend to get their food on the wing. Yeah, they even drink on the wing. And mites don't fly. They crawl. They're in the arachnid family, so they're spiders. They don't have wings. So I don't see how bats could help with a mite situation. And besides, they're so tiny. I don't think a bat, unless it landed on the rear end of a chicken, which probably wouldn't go well.
I was going to say, yeah.
isn't going to search through all those feathers to find the mites on the birds. So it's a great thought process, Farming Dew. I like it. But, you know, I have to go in the favor of the normal flight and eating habits of the good old
probably,
bats.
It wouldn't probably be a very pretty picture either if a bat landed on my rear end. I can assure you, if that was on video, it would be on the America's Funniest Videos. Can you imagine?
Yeah, what? You'd immediately think I'm going to die of rabies.
Yep, running around the yard trying to swat at this thing. Yeah, not a pretty picture. She's laughing in the chat room as well at the bat landing on the rear end of the chicken. So, I guess stranger things have happened. But
yes. Well, I've got one other short study I was going to go into.
If you got time, we got time. No
just
problem.
Just a little bit. And, Andy, you're going to have to help me out with that early bird word because I just don't know it. I came in, I'm sorry, folks, at 15 minutes past. That's
that
when Andy asks me to come
time.
In. So.
That's your assigned time when you come in, exactly. So.
Okay. There was a study that looked at the incidence of broken eggs in something called a furnished cage. And we all know that several people are very concerned with the cages in which a lot of the egg layers are raised in across this planet, and because I can't speak of any other planets. So they want to know that the birds are in larger cages, have more space. There's furnished cages out there that can be used now that have perches and nest boxes for the chickens to use for laying their eggs. And some of the problems are broken eggs. So what they did in this study is they tried to take a look at perch height to see if that had an effect on the incidence of broken eggs in these cages, and then trying to do some other things to increase the attractiveness of the nest so that you get more eggs laid inside the actual nest box rather than in the middle of the cage. So they had high and low perches. The high perches were about 24 centimeters, which is, if we translate that to our system, that's about 9.5 inches. And then they had another one. Low perches were about 7 centimeters, and that translates to about 3 inches. So, you know, high versus low, you know, they were thinking maybe some of the chickens are kind of cracking the eggs as they jump off the high perches and they're kind of getting cracked inside the bird. So what they did is they put 8 hens in each cage, and the cages themselves, and this is an international journal, so they usually do everything in centimeters. The cages were 117 centimeters long, 60 centimeters wide, and 57 centimeters tall at the front. And so lots of space for the birds, several feet long, a couple feet wide, a couple feet tall. So there was ample room for the birds to move around inside these furnished cages. So they had 8 cages for each treatment, 8 hens per cage. And they looked at where the eggs were laid inside the cage and the percentage of broken eggs inside the cage. And how they did this is they looked at the hen position, whether they were on the cage floor, whether they were on the perch, whether on the nest. Because, you know, some chickens, they may just lay the egg while they're still sitting on the perch. And that's not going to go well for the egg. And so what they did is they did direct observations, and I believe they did some video recording so that they could determine, you know, where were the birds when the egg was laid. Are they, you know, what is the preference? The nest material, the nesting material did not influence the number or the percentage of broken eggs or the number of eggs laid outside the nest. And the proportion of outside nest eggs, so the eggs laid outside the nest box, and also the total eggs broken was lower for cages with low perches rather than high perches. So perch use increased during the entire study, so the chickens got used to the perches and they started to use them more and more. And they did that more so for the high cages during the day and low cages during the night. They looked at the duration of time the chicken stayed on the perches, the likelihood that the chicken left a perching bout voluntarily, or whether it was pushed off, and the time spent during, you know, time spent perching. And they found that those numbers were lower in cages with low perches versus cages with high perches. They also looked at replacing the nest floor lining that's normally a plastic mesh with artificial turf, and that did not really help much in reducing the rate of broken eggs. But the prevalence of broken eggs that were outside the nest box was lower in the cages with low perches versus high perches.
Repeat that again, the number of eggs found outside the nesting boxes.
The prevalence of broken eggs found outside the nest box was lower in cages with low perches versus high perches. However, perching behavior during the light period was more disturbed in cages with low perches because I think they're banging into each other, bumping into each other, because they all have to step over the perch. So somebody who's sitting there gets moved. You know how chickens are. They're like, move, move now. I'm coming through. So I thought I'd like to get some feedback from your listeners and see if they thought these studies were the kinds of things that they wanted to hear. I think one more time this year that I'll be doing this. And if people want to hear more about meat chickens, I can focus on that. Or if they want to hear more about ducks, I can look into that. Those sorts of things.
I thought it was awesome. I know, at least on my end, I thought it's very, very, very interesting. And I would think that they would, too, knowing my listeners, I think, over the last 4 or 5 years. So I think it was really interesting, a little switch from maybe doing diagnoses, this, that, or the other, but to actually hear some studies. Students are
doing some pretty cool things out there, huh?
Very, very cool things, absolutely, that can benefit you. Or to say, now, here's a question. Here's one that just popped up in the chat room, and me and my wife always go at each other with this. And she'll say something, and then I'll say something, and it was just posted in the chat room. So, Dr. McRae, is it data or is it data?
Is it potato? Is it potato? Is it tomato or
data.
Is it tomato?
Exactly. I say data. She says data. And farming, she loved the show, and she loves
data. I've been known to say both, so I guess I straddled the fence on that one.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, I asked in the chat room, Dr. McRae, who has the early bird secret password, and I had one person reply.
Boy!
So, needless to say, the card that I swiped to open up the door for the radio show this morning must have shut very quickly behind me. Because some people said they were here, but they missed it because I snuck it in between the beginning theme song and our kind of our follow-up Super Chicken theme song. So they must have just been so dancing around and doing that chicken happy dance that the show was starting that they missed my whisper of what the secret password was. So let's just see. We may have, you know, we always have tons of live listeners that aren't in the chat room. So, and the funniest thing is, remember, and I'll just share this on the show. We don't always share about numbers, but the show you had in December, the topic of the show was washing a chicken. I mean, it was just nothing really, you know, high tech or studies or you know, preventing this or preventing that, or it was washing a chicken, and it had close to 8,000.
Yeah, I know, amazing, huh?
I was like, are you kidding me? 8,000 people listened and wanted to know about washing a chicken. So, yeah, that was amazing.
Just wanted to let your listeners know, Cooptastic is March 2nd. So come join us in Delaware for Cooptastic. It's going to be a fantastic time.
I've been there, and though I'm ecstatic, we're having a little girl to add to the homestead. I was like, this is going to be so cool. We've got the Chicken Whisperer mobile camper, and it'll be beautiful weather. We can head up to Cooptastic, and then all of a sudden we find out Jen's due on the 22nd. So I was like,
you will be otherwise occupied.
Traveling in March, absolutely. Yeah, we have a little pullet whisperer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's fun. Okay, so
see. I'll be there. You all can come and listen and learn lots. I think we're going to definitely do a book signing there. We're also going to have the Mid-Atlantic Avian Bowl Challenge. And, yes, we will have egg judging and the hen dress review again. So, Andy, I know you've seen all this action, and you can speak to the adventure that is Cooptastic.
It is awesome. And Peter Brown's going to be there.
Mm-hmm. Peter
awesome.
Brown will indeed be there.
And there were cool seminars you could sit in and learn. And I think the year I was there, y'all did build a run. Is that what y'all did? Y'all built a run?
Oh, yeah. We build stuff. We're going to actually have, since that was kind of loud that time, we're videotaping it, and we're actually going to videotape that on Monday. We've been videotaping building coops and waters this week. And all those videos will be running. You can walk around all these small mini coops, these urban homestead coops that are put out by all these different chicken companies. We're actually going to have a drawing for the coops after all is said and done on that day. So you can actually go home with a coop if you want to support 4-H. And so 4-H will benefit from that particular drawing.
Now, I have to ask, this year, will some, and I'm wondering, I think the prizes were for the Avian Bowl, but are you going to have those huge,
the giant chocolate chickens?
Chocolate chickens, yes.
I don't know. You'll all have to come and find out.
Oh, man, those things were awesome. And I tried to persuade, just about every kid I saw.
They were 5 pounds of chocolate. Those kids were going to go crazy.
They were awesome. Yep, they were, oh my gosh, 5 pounds of chocolate. You had white chocolate, dark chocolate, and milk chocolate. And
mm-hmm.
I tried to steal one, but I got busted every time I did. Every time. So I couldn't even trade a Chicken Whisperer T-shirt for one. I mean, come on, chocolate or T-shirt, kid, come on.
Well, we're going to talk more about Cooptastic next time I'm on your show. So thank you, Andy, so much for letting me share some science information.
Sure.
And we'll talk later about designing a really nifty project for you to apply for funds for.
That sounds fun. Thank you very much for joining us. Have a great day. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All righty, I was going to have her pick a winning caller, but I guess I can do that. That doesn't have to necessarily be scientific. So since when I asked in the chat room, we had one person who knew the early bird secret password. But there may be many of you out there live that are listening that can't get in the chat room thanks to your workplace or maybe Blog Talks being a booger today and not letting you in. We'll still open it up. But we'll just say caller number 5, just to give a low number, just to give everybody out there the benefit, call number 5-347-637-3237. Right now, live listeners, call in. If you got the early bird secret password, caller number 5-347-637-3237. Now, here's the rule. If we don't have 5 people out there that were on time today when we started the show, and we only have 4 people call in, then I'll go to call number 4. If we only have 3 call in, I'll go to call number 3 or call number 2. Or if we only have Christmas Chick call in, then we will take caller number 1. And she will win. Let me see what the prize will be. Hubba 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 hubba. Let me see. Let's do, it's springtime. We'll do a couple of gifts. We'll do a a $15 gift certificate to critter-cages.com, because those are cool. You can get up to three or four cool things with that one gift certificate, or you can apply it to one bigger thing like a cage or a whatever. So we'll do a $15 gift certificate to critter-cages.com, and we'll do, how about a, let's see, how about a trough feeder, galvanized metal trough feeder. So two prizes that you will get rewarded with if you were a good studious student and got here on time today and got the secret early bird secret password. So a $15 gift certificate, critter-cages.com, and a 24-inch galvanized metal trough feeder, a couple of things anybody and everybody could use out there in radio land. 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237. Give us a call right now if you have that early bird secret password. And it was a little earlier today than I normally do. The radio show started. We had our, let me see how long it is. It'll tell me here in the queue of how long the theme song actually played for. Well, no, it's not. Oh, because it's on the automatic. Maybe 25, 35 seconds of, I think it's about 25 seconds, theme song. And then right after that, I did the password, and then I did the Super Chicken theme song, and then we got into the welcome. So you really almost had to be in the chat room and signed on waiting for me to start the show to get this. So, But we always do the early bird secret password on occasion, just to keep people on their toes. So let's go ahead over here to the switchboard. And yep, and I didn't post the secret password in the chat feed. No, I did not. No, I announced it, but I didn't post it in the chat feed. So I'm over here looking at the caller queue, which has 50 available lines. And right now, folks, it looks like we have 49 available lines that are open right now, which basically tells you one thing. The person in caller queue number one is probably going, "Wow, I feel good." So let's go ahead. I have a feeling who this is. I should have known from the chat room response that this one dedicated listener that just every day, 11:45, 10 till 12, 5 till 12, she's, "I got to get into the chat room. I'm ready for the Chicken Whisperer show. I want to learn all I can about my backyard chickens, and I just want to get in there on time, like a good studious Chicken Whisperer student that I am." So let's go to the phone lines. Caller calling in from area code 407. I'm almost afraid to ask who this might be, but who could this be?
Christmas chick. Yes, it's me.
Bye.
cool is that? Well, not congratulations. You might get it wrong. There's still a chance, folks. She might get it wrong, and the prizes go back in the prize pail, and we'll give them away tomorrow or the next day. So there's still a chance for her to get the question wrong, which, of course, is what is today's early bird secret password?
Tractor.
Yes, it is Tractor. You are the lone winner today. Now, you know what's happening? Christmas Chick right now? Christmas Chick? All,
yeah.
Everybody in the chat room and everybody that's listening to the show live out there in Radio Land and, you know, everybody in the everybody, they're going, because you were so studious and were here on time and you were in your desk and you had your pencil out and everything, you were ready. Everybody is out there calling you a chicken nerd.
I'm a half chicken nerd.
No bullying. This is a no bullying atmosphere, folks. So no, be nice. She is studious. She is not to be considered a chicken nerd. I don't want to hear it. No bullying in this classroom. So congratulations, and the $15 gift certificate to critter-cages.com, and £1 of chicken poop from my backyard, and hey, good fertilizer, eh? And then what was the prizes? The gift certificate and
the trough.
That's right, the trough. So if you will send me an email, you know the drill. Over to contest@chickenwhisperer.net, and send me, you know, your name, shipping address, phone number, email, and if you put in the subject line, troughed and critter cages, or critter cages and troughed feeder, so I know it's both, not just one, because I've got a memory about like an elephant, I guess. Is that right or wrong? Elephants, they say, have the longest memory or the shortest memory. I get that confused sometimes. So, nonetheless, I'll forget if you don't put it there. And congratulations, thank you for being our studious student of the day.
Thank you. You're blessed. Thank you.
Take care, and we'll see you tomorrow right here, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Oh, okay, someone said that would be the goldfish that has the shortest memory of all time, or the attention span of a flea and in the chat room. So, yeah, maybe so. Maybe that's, ADHD, when you're trying to concentrate on something, and then you're like, you know, I think for breakfast today, ooh, look, a chicken. Oh, me. Yeah, I need to go out and mow the grass. Ooh, look, a tractor. Attention span of a flea. Gotta love it. All righty, folks. Thank you very much for tuning in today. Great show with Dr. McCray, and went over a few studies, which were really fascinating. I really liked the one about the free range versus the cage and the eggs, and what's better eggs. What's your definition of a better egg? But it was really cool, very interesting. And one about the mites was pretty cool as well. They were all neat. So hope you all have a wonderful day. Let's see, tomorrow, at least according to my calendar. Oh, look, a chicken. Tomorrow is Fun Friday. So thanks to Christmas Chick, there's two less prizes we'll be giving away tomorrow. Tomorrow. Blame Christmas Chick! But we will have some prizes to give away tomorrow. We will have some trivia. I'm not sure what kind yet. Could be chicken trivia. Could be TV trivia, movie trivia, trivia about America, trivia about tractors or trains, or who knows. So we will... Hey, Christmas Chick's like, hey. So yeah, tomorrow, a shorter show tomorrow because, hey, we're down two prizes now for this week. Thanks to Christmas Chick. But, no, you got to love it. Enjoy those prizes, Christmas Chick. And so tomorrow, Fun Friday, we'll have a great time. We'll have some trivia. We'll give away a few prizes. Hope you can make it tomorrow. We'll have a fun time. And I really hope you have a great day wherever you're at across this great land. And we'll see you tomorrow right here at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. God bless everybody.
Ha ha.